Some call it occupational therapy. I call it magic. We're going to chat about managing behaviors through OT. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org.
This is Nicole, and I am here today with Jack, and we are talking with Zelia Crespo, who co-owns Sensory Works, a sensory gym in Florida that provides occupational therapy. Thank you so much for being here today, Z, and taking time to share with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's such a pleasure to be here. I'm super excited to get into this.
We're excited to get into this, too.
We always start with a very serious question. What is your favorite drink at Starbucks?
I haven't been to Starbucks in a long time because I am Puerto Rican. I make really good coffee at home. So nothing really does it for me there. But if I have to choose, it'd probably be a chai tea latte.
Ah, yeah. We're in good company then. I think those are the things that Jack and I like also. What is it that you make at home?
I make Bustelo, kind of a short espresso coffee with a lot of milk and a lot of sugar, way too much to actually admit to.
That's the coffee that I make at home too.
Now, when you get the chai latte, do you alter it? Almond milk, soy milk, or just straight how it comes?
Straight how it comes.
No cold foam?
Yeah.
No cinnamon on the top?
No, because I think the more you go to Starbucks, the more particular you get.
Let's ask Nicole over here about her Starbucks order. I can't even remember it. It's all these words. And like I'm like reading it off all slow, like a little old lady. And they're like, got it done. And it's like, hand to me. Z, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into occupational therapy?
Yeah, so I originally started, I knew I wanted to do something in medical and wellness and health. I come from family members who are in medical. So I thought originally it was nursing. And then I thought, well, I don't want to just do the medical model of things. I knew it was kind of more leaning towards the health and rehabilitation. So then I got into fitness and group exercise. And I did that for about 10 years and loved every bit of it. I taught everything from Zumba to yoga, Pilates, and all the things in between. Did not like spin. Don't put me on a bike. I'll keel over. So that just didn't work for me. So I loved it for 10 years. And then I thought, well, the natural progression of this is probably to go into physical therapy. It's just made sense. So I applied for a physical therapy program and I was three spots away from getting in. I was super bummed, but I called South University and I said, hey, you know, I didn't get into PT. Is there anything else? And they said, we actually have one more spot in OT. They said, if you can get all your paperwork
in. Are you like,
what's OT? Yeah, exactly. Well, that was my first question. Okay, what's OT? Okay, that sounds like something like PT, but maybe a little better. And it's kind of my mind kind of thinking like, hopefully this is better because your dream is crushed here. And she said, you know, within 48 hours, if you have all your paperwork here by Friday at 6 o'clock, I can get you into this one spot. So it was totally, you know, divine intervention there. And I started my journey in OT and just have loved it, never looked back. And I'm so glad that the PT thing didn't work, the physical therapy.
Yeah, I'm sure PT has its place, but like, I feel like it's just an inferior version of OT. And like, because PT, I feel like, and we'll get into this, but like,
we're a little biased
OT
here.
Like fixes your whole body, even when you're doing like, sorry, I'm not gonna do
I
this.
Have found for my kids, the combination of the two is really what makes everything better. Especially I have kids that have speech needs and feeding needs. So those things really are well served with PT because of like the core and things like that. Mm-hmm. But overall, I have found OT and PT to almost fix the speech stuff in some ways.
But if you could just do more OT, that would probably do both, right? Because OT is
that's
like
true.
PT on steroids.
I know.
And I think for me, for having the fitness background, I get I get the PT things, I get the kinesiology and how the body works. So then applying that into my OT profession has just been like the marriage of both. And I'm not taking away from PTs, you know, more power to you. I love you and I love what you do and we partner well together, but we're just better.
I love that.
So wait, going back, I have to ask you, have I ever told you the story about my one and only and last experience with Pilates?
No.
No, like I broke my wrist.
Oh my gosh. Doing Pilates?
Yes. It was like a bunch of foster moms and we all went to this class and we didn't know what it was. I am not flexible. And my hands also, like I have really bad carpal tunnel, so my hands are always jacked up. As I was telling Miranda the other day, I have finger cancer now because now my finger doesn't work. I was like, my shin cancer moved to my finger. And she was like, she was so funny. She's like, I'm not really sure whether I should play along with you because like we're laughing, or if I, as your therapist, should be like trying to help you grasp reality a little better. I'm like, it's fine. It's just a little cancer in my finger. But anyways, I have hands issues, so I think that my weak wrist. I was like, I don't have good wrists, and they're like, it's okay, you're fine, do it anyway. Broke my wrist, couldn't do anything for like ever, and all the other foster moms were laughing at me, and made fun of me for like ages because I broke my wrist trying to do Pilates.
Z, can you describe for us what OT is in one sentence?
Ooh, that's a hard one because we do a million different things, which is why I love it so much. But in one sentence, OT is therapy that works on gross and fine motor skills, visual tracking and scanning, along with self-care skills, everything that you have to do. This is going to be a run-on sentence.
We're already on a second sentence here.
Everything that you have to do in your daily life, those are your activities of daily living. Those are your occupations. I always use the example, if you were to break your hand, what would you have to do throughout your day and how would we accomplish that? And that's basically what OT is.
I've got a good answer. It's just magic. I don't know how, like, somehow, like, riding around on a scooter makes my kid stop, like, flipping out when he puts socks on. Like, how that works, I don't know. It's magic.
My house is now filled with lots of sensory-friendly OT things.
How's that body grinder going?
They love it.
Yeah?
I have this thing called a Therasqueezer. And there's like four padded rollers.
Can we fit through it?
Not on this one. I wish. But my kids literally line up and I, you know, they just like squeeze their bodies through over and over and over again. And they'll do that for like an hour. I got the idea from another OT that I love and that my kids work with. I was sitting in on one of her sessions and she did this whole exercise where she was like turning my kid into a pizza and using different hand movements on his back and the back of his legs. And she was talking to me about like the pressure and the points and how, I don't know, it's
magic.
Yes, how it's magic. I saw this Therasqueezer in like the fun and function catalog and I was like, this is magic. I cannot turn you into a pizza every day like she did, but I can get you this thing that essentially accomplishes the same thing. So my kids love that.
Everybody just needs to get squeezed. And the more we take off the parents, right, for the kids to do on their own and independently as possible, kind of co-regulates the whole unit.
Talking about everybody loves to be squeezed. Everybody needs to be squeezed. I don't know if either of you watched Grey's this week.
I did watch it.
They're in the patient room. And there's two doctors in there. And all of a sudden, somebody flies in the door of the patient room and jumps up on the bed behind the guy and starts hugging him. Is it paid cuddler? There's the service where you can pay people to come and cuddle you to help, like, regulate your body system. Yeah. I wonder if that's a real thing.
I mean, I kind of think so. I kind of think it probably
that's
is.
That's got to like, be the worst job ever, to, like, hug random. Like, maybe some people, that's great. But for me, like, I don't like touching, like, unless it's, like, somebody I'm comfortable with. How would you compare the difference between PT and OT?
So I would say that PT, physical therapy, typically works on a lot of gross motor, gait training, ambulation, balance and coordination, all of those things. Occupational therapy tends to work on fine motor, the visual scanning part of it, the hand-eye coordination, the self-care. So it's very different in what we do, but we do very much overlap. In school, we would say that PT was kind of below the belt and OT was above the belt. And so that kind of just like kept each other in our lane. But then we also work on ambulation because if I need a kiddo or an adult to walk to the bathroom to then take a shower, well, now we're walking. So now we're kind of doing PT-like treatment.
It sounds to me like OT crosses into PT territory, but PT probably doesn't really cross over into OT therapy.
For the most part, just recently, because we're both understanding, and we'll get into that later on, but we're both understanding reflex integration and how important that is to hitting developmental milestones and everything. The PT part also work on reflex integration.
That's what I've
been, your PT's doing that.
Yeah, working on that.
But I think she's just special.
Oh, she's amazing. But the reflex integration stuff has been a game changer.
So when Jack Jr. was little, somebody brought something to my attention that I didn't notice was like anything different from what any other child would do. Also, he was my first child, so like I had no frame of reference. And someone brought up to me, has he had an evaluation for OT? And what he was doing was he would put his head down like a bull and just like slam into my gut like over and over. And I just thought he was being silly. Also, at that time, not really understanding what OT was. Him taking his head and barreling into things. Now I know that he was looking for sensory input. Maybe you could share with us some of the things that parents might see that could be, hey, that might be something that you would want an OT evaluation for.
Yeah. So when a lot of parents call me, as they call, I kind of say, hey, just tell me a little bit about your kiddo. Because within that first couple sentences, I can see where the needs are, where I need to, okay, I need to press in a little bit of proprioception. That's heavy input to the muscle and joints. This one has gravitational insecurity. So we need to do some vestibular work. This one has a lot going on. We need to do a combination. We need to pull in those rhythmic movements. But I go back to the basics. I go back to, how's he sleeping? Because without sleep, we don't function well. How's he eating? Within those two, I can get a good beginning step to start planning treatment. And then the third question is, are they able to communicate? Because when your nervous system is in that rest and digest, you can socially engage, you can emotionally, you're emotionally regulated, and you're communicating effectively, whatever that looks like for that kiddo. So those are the first, you know, I start kind of digging and I can see, okay. So usually I get kind of the stereotypical call. Usually it's like, they don't sleep very well. They need medication to sleep. They only eat chicken nuggets and french fries, which are typical safe foods, right? Or pizza, which is delicious, but not a well-rounded nutritional diet. They have mutism, selective mutism. You ask them a question and you don't get a response. And then they're breaking down throughout the day, emotionally dysregulated. Just transitions are rough. They're having those outbursts several times a day. And so at that point, I'm like, yes. And I quickly say, hey, if you're questioning, just come in. I educate on the phone, but then I also say, just come in and just get the evaluation and let's go in early and work hard and fast and deal with some of these things so that they don't show up eighth grade year in math class.
My sister-in-law mentioned it was something she was interested in doing. So she educated me a little bit, but not enough to understand that you could use it for like behaviors and all that stuff. It wasn't until I met Jack and she told me about an amazing OT who I have been lucky enough to have my kids work with.
I mean, there's an 8-year wait list.
So all of my kids have worked with her. And it has just made such a huge difference. Now, if I see someone struggling, I'm like, just OT. OT's the answer. It is the first line of defense. Foster care, not foster care. If your kid is struggling, OT is the way to go. Because lots of things could be happening.
You're interacting with these kids. They almost all have trouble regulating their bodies. Talk therapy with a 4-year-old who can't put his socks and shoes on, who can't get in a car, who can't transition from one place to the next. Like, none of that fixes it. But then you bring them to OT and they work with them. And like, I'm telling you, in months, it's like a totally different kid. And that's why I call it magic, because it's like not something that you would think would fix these things, but it happens in such a short amount of time, especially when you're dealing with a younger child who isn't able to verbalize what's really going on. I have found that it is the most effective way to manage behaviors for my little ones.
Can you tell us why you think OT can be an effective treatment, particularly for children with behaviors?
Yeah, I think in the last so many years, OT has really in the last 10 years, OT has really just started to look at the brain and the nervous system and all the foundational for years and years, it's sad to say, but we were working really, a lot of OTs were working top down. We were worrying about, you know, handwriting and can they tie their shoes and all these things without looking at what the brain and the nervous system are doing. Do they have the actual ability to cross midline and sequence two or three steps? No. Okay, why not? And so as we started to do more research, we've realized that if we really want change, we need to go from the bottom up. And so the reflex integration piece is huge. I mean, once your nervous system is regulated and you're in that rest and digest, magic happens there. Because then you can learn, then you can talk, then you have interception and neuroception. You know what's going on with your body. You can hear the body signals of, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Oh, I've eaten too much. Oh, I'm thirsty. That even as adults in high stress situations, ignore. And that's why we as adults get UTIs and things that, because our interception is off. And with high stress and balancing all the things. So yes, I think OT is, I love the first line of defense. I'm gonna totally use that. I should just put that on the building. We just got to get some paid cuddlers and we'll be like. It's just fantastic when you can shift that nervous system and really, really get the foundational things. Then everything on the top just is happens.
If you think about a baby or first year of life, lots of science says skin to skin and just really like nurturing and holding, and it's the same science, mm-hmm. essentially, that you're talking about and you're using in OT. 1 year is not enough. It's not just a baby that needs that. It's really as they get older, as your brain is going through a developmental phase or a growth phase, because then your system is all completely off again, mm-hmm. right? There's lots of cortisol flowing. There's hormones flowing at various ages and stages in your life. You kind of do need to go back to those basics of the baby who's being held, who's mm-hmm. being nurtured to stabilize them and yeah, their yeah, bodies sure. and their brains.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a couple of times rest and digest. So can you explain to me what you mean by that?
Yeah. So that's your central nervous system that we all have. When you're in a place of rest and digest, when you're calm and regulated, you're in a parasympathetic state. That sympathetic state is either mobilization, you're reacting. So I have some kids who have no safety awareness. They just come in and go and jump off of something without looking to see if the crash pad was placed there today and all of the things. And you can be on the extreme side of it, right? That parasympathetic where you're rest and digest, but you need to immobilize into a sympathetic state where you actually react to danger. And then on the far side of that is that immobilization, that freeze. So rest and digest, that fight or flight is that mobilization piece, and that immobilization piece is that freeze. And so you'll see kiddos freeze by not speaking. You'll see that rest and digest too much on this side. So the goal is for them to be able to bounce between different states appropriately, not to stay in the sympathetic fight or flight, but be able to go there when needed, when danger approaches, and then to be able to go back to that rest and digest place.
Sounds like what you're talking about is a place between the various
states
trauma responses of
responses, yeah. The nervous system regulation, that's a lifelong thing, right? You were saying with the cortisol and the hormones, the two most dysregulated parts in a person's life, it's toddler and teenager. And I always like to make this example because I think it's so easy to look at the toddler and say, oh, they didn't sleep enough, they're hungry, they're hot, they're cold, all the things. But then we look at a teenager and we think, oh, you're just being sassy. Hoodie over the head, AirPods in, and they're just completely dysregulated, but we don't give them the same grace that we give the toddler. And then you're going to move, and you're going to move again, and you're going to get married, and hopefully you don't get married again, but you might get married again. And then all the things, and all of those things are going to be stressful, and you're going to need to go back and say, am I regulated, and what can I do in this moment to regulate myself?
Sizzy, we've been talking in this series about how trauma can alter the way that your brain and your body and your nervous system work. These changes result in undesirable behaviors in children who experience them. What we learned with Dr. Wallace is that when excessive, extreme, or repetitive trauma happens, especially to a child who doesn't have a developed prefrontal cortex, that this results in changes to the brain and the nervous system and the body, because it digs deep neural pathways that make it difficult for new pathways to be built because they slide into that old one that's been dug. And because of the floods of cortisol and adrenaline, which turns into dopamine, how those floods can inflame the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala, various other brain parts, and how those changes will make a person not even able to control their body when they're triggered in certain ways in the future. To me, these seem like physiological injuries to the body, right? Mm-hmm. When you're changing the chemistry and the structure of the brain, which is like what controls everything. So what are the ways, the primary ways that OT can repair these physiological injuries to the body?
It all starts in utero. It all starts from day one. When mommy and daddy looked in each other's eyes, and then there was a little Marvin Gaye. And on that day, you know, when that baby was conceived, it all starts then. And so in utero, there's all of these reflexes that start right there. And one of the big ones that has a lot to do with trauma and how we respond on the outside is the fear paralysis reflex. And so that fear paralysis reflex, when mom is really stressed or she's had something traumatic, or there's any kind of drug or alcohol abuse, and there's just a stressful environment inside the womb, the baby understands that, right? Our beautiful design, the baby understands that. And that fear paralysis that starts to emerge at 5 weeks then stays.
5 weeks?
5 weeks.
Jeez.
Okay, so when the mom is stressed, her cortisol that is flooding her is also flooding the baby, right?
Yes.
So at 5 weeks, that starts to affect their fear paralysis.
Fear paralysis. Yeah. Okay. So it should start to integrate. That's when it emerges. And then it should start to integrate at 12 weeks. But what happens is if there is just a high stress, you know, it's stressful in there, the baby just picks up on that and goes, hey, this is getting too stressful. And a lot of times they book it out early. And that results in an early pregnancy, which has developmental challenges there. Or in some cases, a C-section, which completely takes the birth canal part, which finishes developing the other reflexes coming down that birth canal. So then they don't have that. They have this abrupt transition from inside to outside without all of the reflexes, like the spinal gallant, that's actually that swivel and squirm down the birth canal that helps them crawl. You've kind of messed with the order of things, the way that it's supposed to be developmentally. And then we see a lot of effects from that. And then the fear paralysis reflex will turn into the moral reflex. And that's that startle reflex, right? That Jack and I have spoken about a lot with her kiddos. Then you have this all these other things that happen. And we look at this kiddo and we go, oh, you're missing some reflex integration. So you don't have, you know, your STNR is still present at, you know, at this age.
Oh, can you share what STNR is?
Yes, STNR is symmetrical tonic neck reflex. All these reflexes that happen, 9 primary ones that make humans able to eat and walk and look up and down without falling over, and all the things. With the reflex integration, when they come in, the rhythmic movements that we were talking about earlier is definitely a big part of our treatment. They are incredible. So what it is everyone, no matter what age you are, needs to be held and needs to be rocked. And so they're this really intense burst of proprioception, that heavy input to the muscle and joints and that vestibular, that middle ear input. Taking a dose, a high dose of that is what the rhythmic movement is. You lay child or yourself on the floor, either in prone or supine, belly up or belly down, and you start doing these different rhythmic movements, and they're in different directions, and there's 5 primary ones, but lots of variations if kiddo doesn't like it, or you know, they just won't let you because they don't have the intention. They're not in that rest and digest, they're in that fight or flight, and they won't let you get to that place. So then we can do micro rhythmic movements on a bed, on a swing. There's lots of different ways that we can get creative to administer those rhythmic movements. But that starts to really connect the brain and rewire those neural pathways, including the vagus nerve. That's all that social and emotional and speech. And then once we do that, then we can get to a place where the nervous system is in a place to receive that reflex integration. And it's no longer trapped within that nervous system, because that's what happens. That those reflexes get trapped in the nervous system. So we need to fully integrate them and pass them along the way they should be.
Let's kind of define integrate. By integrate, we want them working the way they're supposed to work in the body as they would have if there wasn't that whatever caused, whether it was by stress or something they missed when they were in the womb, right? So integrating them means putting them into working function in the body, right?
Yeah, so like the rooting reflex starts birth, but then we shouldn't see it past 9 or 10 months. So we know that if that rooting reflex is still there, if I had a 3-year-old at the clinic the other day and I had like tapped his cheek and he went and started turning his head towards my finger, well, that's, you need to integrate that because that shouldn't be happening that late
at
in the
this
game.
Time,
yeah,
right.
At 3 years old. Yeah.
The reflexes happen at certain times, but they have to go away at certain times. Is that correct?
Yes. It's the body's response to a stimuli. So if I give that stimuli, I'm looking for a certain response that should match up with the chronological age.
Let's say I had an infant. He didn't have a rooting reflex. The reason we knew that is because Like, he was never moving his face one way or the other to look for the bottle or the nipple or whatever his natural instinct would have been. Initially, he should have had that reflex, right? Mm-hmm. But he didn't. Mm-hmm. And you could tell because you could touch him in certain areas and he wouldn't turn. Let's say, hypothetically, you were doing OT with him and all of a sudden now he's rooting. Unfortunately, he shouldn't be rooting anymore. We wanted him to do it and he did it, but this is the period of time where that should stop. So when you touch him on one cheek or the other, he shouldn't be turning, and you're doing reflex integration, which is rebuilding neural pathways, which is going to make that stop. Is that right?
That's correct. So he doesn't have the cognition, right, to know that I need to go look for the bottle. So we're developed with these survival reflexes to be able to do that, right? Our brain just naturally does that as a reflex. But then we get that cognition through learned behavior, right? Like, we keep doing it. And then every time we go towards the bottle, we get fed, we feel good, we meet that need. Eventually, he'll have the cognition to be able to know, there's my bottle, I can see it, I know that it's food, I know that it's going to go in my body, I know, you know. And then he doesn't need that instant reflex.
For something like the Mora reflex, I'm not an expert in any way. We all know my medical degree is from Grey's Anatomy.
This has the Mora reflex. You can just sneak up on him and just go, boom. Which is, you know, unconventional, but it works.
Right.
And but we don't want to give them more trauma, right? So we don't do that. But we'll take baby and I'll just, like, you know, with my really young ones, I'll just tilt him back and see if they extend their arms out. Do they respond? Do they give me a noise? And that reflex is to let mommy know, hey, I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm scared. It's a defense.
Right? So you want to see them communication. Put their arms out, or you don't?
I want to see them put their arms out for a certain amount of time.
At what time do you want that particular reflex to integrate? Like, at what age?
The Mora reflex, by 18 months, they shouldn't have that Mora reflex anymore. So if they're still...
So if you have a four-year-old and they're still going, wah! Then you know it's not integrated. Yeah, right. And that might be why they spend 12 hours a day screaming at the top of their lungs, breaking things, throwing things, refusing to put socks and shoes on.
Exactly.
Hypothetically. And I know this isn't the only thing that OT does, but the reflex integration work, what I want our listeners to understand and make sure that I'm understanding it correct, these reflexes are a lot bigger than just, I throw my hands up. When, you know, to not have them properly integrated or coming at the right time usually results in behaviors, from what I've seen. It affects their development and the way that their body and brain reacts to things.
Let's take an atypical, for whatever that term means, but a kiddo that's in just normal school. We have a school contract, so we go in service. And then I have a kiddo who I'm working on handwriting, but visually they can't copy off the board from the board to their paper, or they can't sit still, or they can't maintain proper sitting posture to be able to handwrite. So it's all the things, right? So I can come in and I can see that they're STNR, their ATNR, which is asymmetrical tonic neck reflex, are off. I can see this one kiddo that I'm thinking about in particular, I can see that his spinal gallant is off, that he doesn't have the reflex integration to be able to hold himself up. So whereas it may not come out in screaming fits, it may come out when, I would say, like, eighth grade math or sixth grade math, because that tends to be where we see a lot of struggle. And then we start kind of digging. You know, they've got themselves to a place by compensating, but now they're here and they're at a higher level and they're not able to perform. And so then they're coming in and we're going, why didn't you come in when they were three or four? But it's okay. We'll make up and we'll work on it, because they can always be integrated. And even in adults, you can have reflex integration. You can have reflexes, you know, not integrated fully because of trauma and different things. So with reflexes not integrated, I see it in that poor interception that, you know, do I need to go to the bathroom? I'll see 10, 11, 12-year-olds still in pull-ups because they have poor interception. I see it in their eating patterns because their mouth is the most sensitive part of the body. So when I don't feel safe, it's kind of a catch-22, right? Because the reflexes can cause the nervous system to stay in fight or flight, but then also you need your nervous system to be in rest and digest to integrate them. So you kind of go back and forth between these two things. But I'll see it in, you know, communication, that mutism that we spoke about earlier, the selective mutism, you know, the mouth being the most sensitive part of the body, you know, the picky eating. I'll see it with visual tracking and scanning. They have a hard time reading and comprehending. So there's just all these things that get wrapped up in this. That's the bottom-up approach that we really need to address and be very intentional with.
It really comes out in so many ways. It comes out in the way they perform in sports, because their balance is off, because ATNR and STNR are not integrated. And then they have the spinal gallant and all these other things that are just not there. It comes out in not even being able to stand still.
Can you talk to us about some other ways that OT can help repair these trauma injuries?
Along with the rhythmic movements and the reflex integration, we also administer a program that we're super excited about and we're getting really good gains. It is an integrated listening system. It's called Safe and Sound Protocol, and it's administered for a total of 5 hours in small increments of time to the total of 5 hours via headphones. And what it does is it works on the middle ear, the muscle and the bones in the middle ear to strengthen and listen for those cues of safety. And that's that middle frequency. So that's the way that we humans talk to our kids and our babies. It's that really soft, oh, baby, it's okay. It's going to be okay. Mama's going to get your bottle. So a lot of, you know, foster kids have trauma and have that disconnect between birth parent and, you know, whatever the transition looked like, whatever the stress looked like, a lot of neglect. And they didn't necessarily get those cues of safety. So just like the reflexes, if we have that brain being wired, okay, when I hear that middle frequency, a need is met and I go to a happy place and I'm in that rest and digest and everything's good and mommy's smiling and looking at me and holding me and feeding me and keeping me safe, that middle frequency really starts to send cues to the nervous system to calm. And so there's that connection is made. However, what happens is with kids that are on this autism spectrum or have auditory processing, there tends to be a lot of low muscle tone, including in the middle ear. So they're hearing frequencies at a really high, like siren or alarm, or really low, like the roar of a lion. Both are very, are not comforting for the nervous system and send that nervous system into that fight or flight. So all day they're hearing these high and low frequencies instead of this really loving middle frequency that tells their nervous system to just relax and calm.
Which is interesting because a lot of the time when kids are in this place of trauma and behaviors, the response from people who are not trauma informed is probably very high pitched.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know my Latin mama used to scream at me. You know, and not middle frequency. But yeah, so we're just really learning that if we can do that. And then the craziest thing that happens kind of between hour two and three is that your system has to learn that middle frequency is safe, right? So it has to, that rewiring process. So in two and three, the nervous system literally will go in haywire. And there's a very dysregulated part of this whole process before we hit regulation and we hit the sweet spot, because they have to relearn, hold on, middle frequency is actually safe. And that's safe for my system. And then it'll learn that. And then that 6 week post, that 5 hour listening, we really see a lot of gains and a lot of wins. So it's been really exciting.
How does that work with auditory processing? Are they just not able to hear that middle frequency?
They're not processing it as middle frequency. They're hearing it too low or too high. That middle frequency, and I did the listening to myself back in November because I was like, I need to see, like, I need to know what this is, what this feels like. It brought up some things in my nervous system. It didn't add anything new, but it definitely brought things to my attention so that I can deal with them that were causing me stress kind of behind the curtain. And so that was fun.
We will be recording with a therapist who does EMDR. When you were describing what Safe and Sound was like for you, it felt very familiar to how EMDR works. And I'm very interested in how the science behind all of that. I'm just leaving it with, it's like kind of magic. It was very interesting to me that it had a similar type of result.
The auditory processing, Dr. Stephen Porges actually created the Safe and Sound Protocol for auditory processing disorder, and then it turned into autism. But then he realized that when people started listening to the middle frequency, their nervous system shifted. So then mental health counselors are now using it even more than occupational therapists, because
really?
It's doing so much.
So it is being used like EMDR.
Very much so. So they're going to be worked interchangeably, overlapping each other for sure, because they're both two amazing, amazing, amazing protocols. The auditory processing, that middle ear is weak. And so when I listened to it, it felt like my middle ear was doing push-ups, little baby push-ups, which is really weird. Kind of feels like you're on a plane, not painful, but just you feel the pressure and you feel that kind of back and forth. So it's literally pulling that eardrum forward and back and strengthening those muscles and bones of the middle ear so that they can hear the middle frequency. It takes more work to hear the middle frequency. So yeah, it's really, really interesting.
That's interesting. And you said you're using this with clients, patients in like small doses.
I start each of my patients with 10 minutes, sometimes 5 minutes. If they're coming in and they're very, they're already in that fight or flight, and I can tell there's a lot going on, or they're in that freeze, they're tucked behind mama when they're walking in to the clinic, I go, okay, we're going to go slow. And we start with 5 minutes and we just work our way up. And it may take us a couple months to get through the 5 hours, and that's okay. There's no rush. You can always go too fast on the nervous system, but you can never go too slow.
Okay.
So we just go slow and steady.
And she'll warn you when to look out for things.
And when you might see
some like changes and stuff. Baby Jack did it. And actually the week that she was like saying, this is the week you're probably going to see some improvement. At the end of that week, me and his ABA and one of his RBTs were all talking about how unbelievably joyful he was that week. Mm. Like he just seemed a lot less anxious. Like just had this big, goofy, relaxed grin all week.
So the Safe and Sound protocol, it strengthens the muscle and the bones of the middle ear, like I stated earlier, through the middle frequency. And when it does that, it's a straight shot into the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve connects from the middle ear all the way down to the colon. And that's why when you get nervous, you get the butterflies and you get the upset stomach, or it can trigger diarrhea, constipation, and it all ties into that nervous system. So what we've learned, that polyvagal theory that Dr. Stephen Porges created, the vagus nerve is so important in that regulation of nervous system. It's the number one. It's that nerve that sets off that parasympathetic response. It's also 80% responsible for any of the other cranial nerves and what they do to socially engage with other people. So it's a very, very important part of that Safe and Sound protocol, is the fact that it's so effective with rewiring that vagus nerve.
Would that affect a child who's having potentially having like speech problems or feeding problems when they're younger, or even like toileting situations when they're older? Could it affect all of those things?
It affects everything. Yeah. Because you have that social engagement piece that's needed for the speech, right? That I can read your face. I can tell what's going on here. I can feel safe enough to be able to speak, that expressive language piece. But then you also have the toileting and the bowel and all of that, the bowel control, urination control, all of that, that's being tied into your nervous system. If I'm relaxed, I can open up the other sensitive parts of my body, right? So that mouth is the most sensitive part of your body, right? And the other responses are what happens underneath.
This would be really helpful for any caregiver, parent, child, especially for kids maybe on the spectrum.
Yeah, the vagus nerve is the channel. It's the game changer. It's the be all. I mean, once you can rewire that vagus nerve, everything else comes into alignment.
See, how can OT help children with prenatal drug exposure and other prenatal negative events?
That fear paralysis reflex definitely is a big deal here, right? That stress and just that being transmitted to the baby. So what we do is, as soon as they come out, in my career, in my lifespan, hopefully, I can really tackle educating the mass population about how important the rhythmic movements are, because I think every baby needs to do it, but I think especially babies that are drug exposed need to do it even more so, because they're just coming out high stress, right? And that, and immediately into that fight or flight. So doing those rhythmic movements, I think, will be a game changer in the rest of their brain development and that nervous system regulation. I had a set of twins a few years ago that I was working with, and the little girl had severe tremors because of being drug exposed. And the little boy had minimal ones, but the little girl had, quite a bit, where it was hard. We had to use a weighted wrist weight on her to be able to get her to write. And she did. She ended up writing, and eventually we kept integrating those reflexes, and she was able to come on the other side of it and not have the tremors anymore. So that was huge. But
wow.
That's really cool.
I mean, it took until I worked with her for quite some time to... She was in third grade when we finally, they finally stopped altogether. So
even when kids are drug exposed, they might not have the tremors or kind of like the base signs that you think to look for. Maybe the kid can't eat, or maybe they can't walk, or, it's like these other basic life functions that they just don't have. And it's not necessarily because they tremored for 6 months.
What's interesting is that out of every kid that I've had that came from the hospital with drug exposure, the one with the most severe after effects was the one who tremored for the shortest time span. The least effects that I'm seeing
are the kids that tremored for 4 months nonstop. I wonder if the tremoring has some, like, positive impact.
They're rhythmic moving themselves.
I just took a course that was talking about the rhythmic movements. Yeah, and for Parkinson's, it has tremendous gain for stroke patients. So you're really
seeing rhythmic movements.
Because so is the tremoring like a rhythmic movement in itself?
Right? Like a neural pathway, like any movement is medicine, right? That's what we learn in therapy school. Like movement is medicine. Dang. So any of it is probably neural pathways, neuroplasticity, reconnecting. It's firing the signal.
Z, how can OT help children with autism?
It's the rhythmic movements. It's a reflex integration, the safe and sound protocol. It's all of those things that help support that nervous system. When that nervous system is in the rest and digest, everything else comes out of that. They're able to do all the things. They're able to... So if I have a kiddo who can't sit and attend and visually track or scan, how are they going to learn? You know, so you just really have to get them to a place where they can sit and attend and learn. And then you start talking and you start working on the eyes and you start working with the hands and all the things come together.
Is there anyone that OT does not work for?
No.
No.
Everybody needs it.
Telling you.
Next podcast, everybody needs OT.
So maybe I should be doing rhythmic movements with my kids when they're on the yoga mats on the floor.
Yes, you are the co-regulator, which is why we're starting an adult class soon, because we're like,
all these apple trees need some pruning.
These apples.
I want to be signed up for that.
Yeah. But I'm like, but my apple trees are looking a little crazy. So let's all lay down.
I think she just called us crazy.
I mean, I've been called worse and actually crazy.
It goes back to that skin to skin in infancy, right? That they're hardcore pushing now, which I love. Mm-hmm. And we just got to get the tummy time pushed, like from the. But anyway, I'll go back to.
Well, no, go like, ahead. Actually, what were you going to say?
I was going to say with the whole, you know, SIDS thing, like that is a real thing, you know, the sudden infant
death syndrome.
Yeah, death syndrome. Mm-hmm. However,
I'm totally in agreement with her, which is why I'm laughing. But I know that you know I am.
Yeah, you know, with that moral reflex not being integrated, they wake themselves up, they startle themselves. There's just this constant colicky. Then you have a drug exposed baby that's just in that fight or flight. So those arms and those legs are going, and they're. As soon as you flip them like a pancake, they get all that proprioception, all that sensory input to the front of their body. They're able to work their neck and lift their neck. So now they're working on that tonic labyrinth reflex, the TLR reflex for the neck, which is the primary reflex of any kind of movement. But they're able to work on that when they're on their belly. So I'm going to start a campaign called Flip the Baby.
Dude, I'll make the website.
I mean, don't people do...
Just don't put a bunch of things on the baby's crib, like flip the baby.
Can you talk to us about a specific time where, through OT, a child was able to achieve success in behavior improvement or overall well-being?
Just this past Friday, I had a safe and sound protocol meeting 3 weeks post-listening, post the 5 hours of listening, and kiddo is doing extremely well. So he tried mashed potatoes and tomatoes, which are a big move, because he was, when we started in December, he was only eating maybe one chicken nugget per day. Pediasures. Wow. He's eating the mashed potatoes. He's eating the tomatoes. He is talking, which is a huge win. Anytime my babies can talk, because then that immediately almost starts improving that emotional regulation, because now I can communicate what I need and want. Right. And I'm not having to bite or hit or, you know, scratch or kick. So that's a huge win. So he's communicating better. He's eating more. And visually he's attending, which mama said he, you know, for him to look in my eyes and that's heartbreaking, right? For mom to be able to just, does he even know I'm in the room? Right? For my autistic kids, is he able to look at me and say, and hopefully, you know, very soon here, he can get to the point where he can say, you know, I love you, mom. Just something so simple. He's using his ACC better, his alternate communication board, and he's able to, you know, key in the words on his iPad and make a sentence now. So he has some words verbally coming out, but then he has lots of words within his ACC.
That's so cool.
So just really, like, I left that session. That was my last task of the day, and I was like, yeah! I'm out.
Like, drop my mic.
Can you give our listeners something that they can do at home to help regulate their children's behaviors that is based out of OT?
Get one of those pressy things. I think that works out fantastic. Like, just squeeze them to death.
Squish them.
So just squish them. Well, there's a lot of things, right? Compression is a big deal. So just a simple hug. Hug your babies a lot. Even when they don't want your touch, hugging is huge. Love them skin to skin. You are their co-regulator. So if you slow down your breath and you get yourself in a good space, you're able to do that for them. If you're like, you know, you got to sit down and you're trying to do rhythmic movements, they're probably going to run away from you. This lady's hyperventilating. I don't want to go next door. But just take a second and just co-regulate yourself so you can be in a good place. Hug them, massage them. Touch is so important. And that's why those rhythmic movements are so beneficial, because you get the proprioception, you get the input, you get the vestibular with the rocking, and then you get the touch.
Little Jack hates touch.
I know. I touch him all day long.
I was in my room editing the brain science episode, and Mini Jack came up and wanted to snuggle. So I was snuggling with her. Little Jack came up because he was very mad that Mini Jack was not downstairs running around squealing with him. So he came up, but then when he saw there was snuggling going on, he started to run. And I was like, oh, come here. I have to talk to you, which all my kids know it means, like, I'm going to snuggle you and you're going to deal with it. He, like, begrudgingly came over. It's like I'm a monster with slimy arms when I touch him. He's like, his whole body tenses up. I pull my arm back and I'm like, okay, you can go. It's like, oh, I can breathe again. So, yeah, I touch him all the time and it doesn't work, but I'm sure one day.
Can you share about what SensoryWorks is doing in our community?
So SensoryWorks, our goal and our mission is to just love on the kids, love on the families. I never want it to be a point where we get so big that someone comes in the door and I don't know their name personally. I haven't lived life with them. We don't have a running inside joke. Like, I want to do life with my families that come in the door. And Grace and I are very, very passionate about that. And we just constantly check in on ourselves to make sure that we're still staying true to our mission and our vision. That being said, within our community, we've developed kind of this spider web of other providers. And it's just beautiful because we don't, you know, I know earlier in the podcast I said, OTs do everything, but we don't do everything. Or we're not trained to do everything. I do everything, but I'm not trained. So I try to stay in my lane. And there's other providers that do what they do well, and our missions are in alignment. And so when I find a provider like that, I lock arms, I bring them some chocolate, and I start, like, developing this relationship. So then my families come in and they say, hey, I need an SLP, a speech therapist, or I need a good chiropractor, functional medicine doctor, or there's a lot of trauma coming up with my kid and I need a mental health counselor. I know exactly where to direct them to. And we're also working with Oasis. We partner with them. And we're working with little babies that have been through trauma a lot through immigration.
For our out-of-state listeners, can you describe what Oasis is?
So Oasis is a pregnancy center that their model is trying to keep baby. But if you are abortion-minded, they'll educate and walk you through that process. And if you do decide to keep baby, then they give you resources for up to 1 year. And they do a phenomenal program that educates parents, and they can earn points. And then those points can be used to buy the things that they need, like a car seat and a crib and all the things. They provide lots of education to mom and dad and any of the caregivers, any family that's involved, to really make it a good environment. So they say, hey, if you want to, you know, terminate pregnancy, we're with you there. And we're going to stay with you. And we're going to counsel you after. And we're going to do all the things. But if you want to keep baby, we're going to hold your hand for a year and really beyond, because they still maintain that communication. So in that nervous system regulation, whether it be through drugs or any kind of just high stress, not having the resources you need, the financial resources or whatever it may be, or, you know, any kind of traumatic experiences that have happened to you know, that have gotten you to this place, because that happens sometimes too, we can say, hey, refer them to us. Let us work on the nervous system regulation of baby and mom. And so that's been this really beautiful partnership that's really come probably the last 2 months. It's fairly new, but it's already just taken off so fast. So some of the other things we're launching, the Apple Tree. I'm gonna call it the Apple Tree for my parents. Nervous system regulation, doing a lot of the yoga, the wrist breaking Pilates. So we're gonna have our Apple Tree segment for the moms and dads for nervous system regulation, and any of the caregivers to come and do yoga, you know, breathing techniques, anything that really just can help regulate them to be good co-regulators for their kiddos. So that's a big part, that touch massage. And there's all kind of different things. There's ear massages, and it sounds quirky, but there's all these things that you
Wait,
can do
what to massages?
to massage your ear.
Ear?
you know what little Jack does. Like, yeah. Nervous system regulating.
Baby thing. Jack. Baby Jack.
Baby
does
Jack.
The ear,
yeah.
Massage.
Baby Jack massages my ears. I like it.
He's actually like the best. We were talking about this. He's the best cuddler in the house. You can hire him to be a paid cuddler and give the ear massages.
Perfect. I'll be like, okay, go over there, cuddle that boy. Start with your brother. But so we're gonna start supporting adults, and we've actually started. We had our first adult client 2 weeks ago. And so we're just working through her nervous system, making sure those reflexes are integrated. All the things we do with kiddos, it's human. So it's all the same things, right? So we're really excited about that. In the summer, we're offering art classes and music classes. And then I'm really excited about a dance class. So I have a dance, she has her degree in dance education, but she's also been a dancer her whole life. And she's going to school to be an OT. So it's like this perfect marriage. I said, hey, how about we offer a dance class that works on reflex integration? I'm going to like hip hop through sensory works and work on all the things. So I'm really excited about that because I love dance. You know, being Latin, it's the bustelo. It makes my hips move. I can't help it. I'm dancing right now.
I'm going to have to find out what this bustelo stuff is.
I'm sure it's caused a lot of trauma because people either get really excited about it or they go like, one time I ran to work and forgot my car. Like, so it's like one or the other.
What?
I'd be like, no. Or yes, yes, yes. So
what is going in this bustelo?
It's very, very strong. Like it's Starbucks very strong. Starbucks has nothing on this.
Agreed.
And then we're going to have a provider meetup. So we're really just trying to build this community. I have about 20, I think my list is at 24 right now. And they go from everything from educators, teachers, tutors, pediatric chiropractor, SLP, ABA.
And I think my children are single-handedly destroying the tutoring situation. Or maybe just one of my children in particular.
Yeah.
And he can't have fun without being loud. And he can't be at sensory works without having fun, and somebody's in there tutoring.
Listen, I don't care. It just, you're just going to have to deal with it. You're just going to have to learn math facts over that screaming child. And just, you know, it's good for your system. Cuddler.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.